Okay, I am here with Mary McBride, who is in town for the Festival of Arts and Ideas. Mary is a musician and is the founder of the Home Tour, which is a really important project at the intersection of the musical craft and wider ideas of social well-being, humanitarianism, social justice. So welcome.
And thank you. Thank
you for taking the time. For people who don't know what the Home Tour is, can you just give us the brief description of that project, but also maybe tell a few stories that to you kind of convey its significance, its importance, what's been most interesting about it to you?
Sure. I started the Home Tour in 2010. I'm a touring musician, and I've been on the road for 10 years prior to that. And my basic idea was that we would play live concerts for people who don't ordinarily have access to live music. And we did a pilot program in 2010. We did 40 shows trying to figure out whether or not there was a need for it and whether other groups were out there doing concerts in places ranging from prisons to long-term healthcare centers to mental health facilities, veterans hospitals, any place that people would call home where they might not have access to live music was where we were going. We realized pretty quickly that there were not people who were providing concerts on a regular basis. And so we have launched the Home Tour to do just that. And we're here in Connecticut partnering with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services to bring live music to mental health facilities and also to do songwriting workshops with young people enrolled in the Young Adult Services Program, many of whom have aged out of child welfare and are now in a transitional program between the ages of 18 and 25. So we're writing songs with them.
Right. You've described, I mean, you've really been traveling all over the world, 25 countries, I think you said, most recently returning from Haiti. You've mentioned being in war-torn Iraq. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences traveling the world and kind of how you see your own work getting reflected back to you in the audiences that you're now working with?
I think in many ways, music is the great equalizer. You know, it's something, and I have been reminded again and again in the 25 countries that we've played in that it is really something that people don't just want, but that they need. And I think the other thing that I've realized is that everyone around the world loves rock and roll. So no matter you know, where we are, whether we're in Iraq, whether in Pakistan, you know, we played Afghanistan, Vietnam, I mean, all over the world with different musical really orientations, that the music that we play, which is pretty upbeat, old school rock and roll, soul, resonates with these audiences. And I think the fact that we play for people who are in many ways struggling and trying to get through their days, that the Home Tour hopefully gives them a moment to take a break from that daily struggle and to appreciate what they've accomplished and what they're doing and recognize that they have a right to have a good time.
Was this, when you embarked on this project, was it a departure for you, or is it on a continuum with other kinds of work that you've done that bring music into a kind of wider sphere?
You know, I've always tried to find non-traditional audiences, but the idea that we were playing where people live was very different for me. And I said this earlier today, that I come from a long line of non-profiteers, so we've always volunteered, and my parents were both very involved in nonprofits. And so that, I think, just on a personal, familial level, that comes very naturally to me. And the notion of giving back has always been a big focus for me. But the Home Tour has blessedly given me an opportunity to merge all of my various interests.
Mm-hmm. And how different are the audiences that you play to? I mean, the whole kind of gift of the project is based on the premise of commonality, and yet you do find yourself in very different settings in very different countries facing. I mean, it's, you know, being a prisoner is very different from, you know, being in another kind of institution or being homeless. Or so how do you think about the broad range of people that you've come in contact with?
Well, in the Home Tour in the U.S., where we play in facilities, I always say know, in many ways we're playing for invisible populations. We're playing for seniors, we're playing for people with severe mental health issues, we're playing for vets who have come home and are sort of outcast. I realize that the through line there is mental illness, that there's always some level of feeling isolated and coping. The interesting thing about playing for these audiences is that there's just a range of engagement. So whether it's because of meds, whether it's because of what their specific ability or disability is, they're engaging with us in a completely different way than a regular audience would. And so when we're playing for people with specific mental illness, that's really interesting. But we also play for regular audiences around the world. So Pakistan, for example, we play mostly for young people in the Middle East, and they go completely bonkers when we start playing. I mean, I always joke that I feel like Justin Bieber in Pakistan, because I start singing and the girls start screaming. And there's no way to really overstate the enthusiasm when you're in a country where it is both illegal and immoral to sing in your home and to dance in your home. And so to give them an opportunity to do that and the freedom to do that in a safe space creates an incredible dynamic and environment. And you also see the power of Western music and the power of the 2/4 beat, which I'm a big fan of. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a range of experiences.
Uh-huh. Have you ever felt in danger?
I have. I mean, we were in Afghanistan, and we were, the first day we got to Afghanistan, we were on a base where we were staying. We were playing for locals. We weren't playing for troops, but we were staying on a base, and we arrived at the airport, and there was no one there to pick us up. And so we flew commercial to Kabul, and it was just a weird thing where our State Department person got stuck at a checkpoint, and it wasn't a big deal, except there we were with our 27 pieces of gear and equipment waiting for somebody. And so that was pretty nerve-wracking, and it was particularly nerve-wracking the next day when I woke up. I was staying in this little old shipping container that they turned into a room. And I had a little tiny television, and I turned on the TV, and I saw that they had that a bus with 12 people, 12 Westerners, had been killed by a female suicide bomber at exactly the same spot where we had been waiting the previous day. So we haven't felt in direct danger, but I think that there have been quite a number of near misses that have kept us on our toes. I mean, for the most part, we have State Department security. We have the best security in the world. So we don't feel in particular danger. On the other hand, they'll say to us, you're not going to be shot, but if a suicide bomber is in the vicinity, there's not much anyone can do. So we go out there knowing the level of risk, but we've done it enough that I think everyone is comfortable with our level of security.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask, this is going to sound ridiculously broad, but I'm curious what you've learned in doing this work, and I'll let you take that in any direction. I mean, what have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about music? What have you learned about human beings? What have you learned about the state of the world?
One of the things I've learned, and I thought about this yesterday, and I thought about it today during the panel when I was talking about the band getting better at what we do, I think we are learning to connect more, and that is so much about bringing yourself wherever you are. I mean, it's easy for people to go around the world and walk in that room, whether it's for people dealing with massive level of psychosis, whether it's we played in Vietnam in Quang Tri for most of the entire room were amputees, dealing with physical and mental disability, and you realize your own comfort level definitely gets tested in those situations. And so I think what I've learned and what I've gotten better at is realizing that I'm only playing at a lot of these places I'm playing once. Connecticut, we're lucky, we're coming back and we have an ongoing program. In many of these cases, the Mary McBride Band will only be there once. Maybe other bands will go, but there's no time to warm up. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have time to either warm up your own feeling of comfort and to warm, you know, kind of ease into the room. You have time to warm up your voice. Like, you need to go in there and kind of, it's, I always say it's like vaulting. You have to
Well, and be incredibly alert, it seems. I mean, you can't just take refuge in the music itself.
Yeah, and it's not, and the other thing, and I feel this spiritually as a musician in general, that the music is about the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm the first, I mean, a lot of the guys in my band love indie rock and kind of more music where people are, musicians are playing guitar and staring at their toes. And I just feel like, I like old school, like upbeat music where it's really about the room. And to be able to go into a room and recognize the audience and bring them in very quickly is something that we've learned is really important, because any other tact doesn't work with the communities that we play with. I've learned that seniors love rock and roll. They don't want to hear a ballad. Vets love Kris Kristofferson and the Rolling Stones. And, there are these cliches that actually end up being true. And I think I've learned that it's important to keep trying to go back and create this model that's going to be lasting, because anyone can volunteer once, and we all have done it, and we all volunteer Christmas or Thanksgiving, or we volunteer after major disasters, but to figure out, for me, it's I have learned that the most important thing for me to do is create a model and a structure that works for other people who may not have the skills I have organizationally, but who are really willing and interested in giving their music to a wider range of audiences. Mm-hmm. So that's been something that's been life-changing for me in terms of creating the focus.
I know that you're really working now to lay down an infrastructure that will extend home tour and involve more places and more people. I want to come back to that in a second, but first, what you were just describing, that kind of the experience with the audience and that kind of attentiveness that is required of you to play to these different audiences, has that changed your relationship to the craft?
It has in some ways. It's made me, when I play songs that work, whether it's a cover, whether it's another song that I've written, I'm much more mindful of writing more songs with that vibe and that feel, instead of constantly trying to write something different than the last thing I wrote, because I want songs that work. We all have our, it's like conversationally, we all have our surefire hit stories. If you're in a lull in a conversation and tell that story,
tell
that's
that
funny.
Story, right.
And I think musically we do the same thing. We're like, oh, play Ray Charles, that always works. So what I do is try and kind of take that vibe. Like, we just started playing Oh and the Saints, because we were in New Orleans, and that New Orleans vibe. I mean, I'm from Louisiana, but I didn't really integrate that kind of Zydeco, New Orleans, Dixie vibe. And that really works. So we're writing a song right now, which is an old kind of second line song, with horn. In our mind, we dream of a horn section, but with sounds like a horn section, and so things that feel community oriented and that would bring people together. That's been a big change for me.
Mm-hmm. What kind of music did you start out playing?
I grew up thinking I was going to be an opera singer. I studied at the Washington Opera when I was 12, 13. And I studied with a wonderful woman named Dorothy Remington, who was at the Washington Opera. And then I went, went to high school and college and kind of got the rock and roll bug. But I sang everything. I mean, when I was studying, I sang opera, I sang standards. I think songwriting standards, I mean, all the old Gershwin, Irving Berlin. I mean, all of that music has been really helpful to me, just in terms of the actual construction of a song. But I think that what I love is what my parents listened to, really old school rock and roll.
Okay, so now let's come back to your ambitions for the organization, Home Tour. First of all, so as an organization, what does Home Tour consist of at this point?
Right now, we have launched the tour in Los Angeles. We have ongoing programs in Los Angeles, Seattle, and Portland. We've also done it in the Gulf, but we have some work to do there. And Connecticut. I think Connecticut is probably our biggest success in terms of having all of the state agencies work together and having the mental health community and the housing community behind us. So we're going to try and take that model that we've created in Connecticut and take it to each state and say whatever the entities are in each state, we need you to work together, whether it's with the governor's office, the veterans office, the housing office, and get their buy-in early on. And then launch the tour in multiple cities so that it's really decentralized in terms of, you know, I run it. We are hiring a general manager. So that's going to be a life changer for me. you know, we have interns. It's a great intern project. So we have a varied, and I, you know, I'm kind of the chief, ultimately, I'm the chief cook and bottle washer of the whole thing. So we're going to try and create these teams in every city. It's really, in some ways, it's not dissimilar to launching a political campaign. And we're going to have a director in each city. We're going to have somebody who's kind of organizing and putting together a consortium of nonprofits that provide shelter and or services for people in need. That consortium will exist, and together they will figure out the schedule, and we'll figure out the local musician. So creatively, we'll figure out what music works and see how that goes. I mean, we're launching the tour in Detroit on September 7th, and we'll be there for 14 days. And we've got some great people playing with us. I mean, Rodriguez may be playing with us. We've got Dennis Coffey. I don't know if you know Dennis Coffey. He played. He's in the documentary. He's the white guitar player in The Shadow of Motown. So he's going to play with us. We've just got some great people. And, I mean, musically, Detroit's such an interesting place because we're working with a group, Southwest Solutions. They're primarily in Southwest Detroit, which is primarily a Latino neighborhood in a black city. So figuring out how to navigate those cities and neighborhoods and reflect back on them is my big challenge, in which I hope when I can relinquish some of the nitty-gritties of making it all happen, I can do that in a more comprehensive way.
Wow. Weren't Question Mark and the Mysterians a Latino band from Detroit? I think they were.
I don't know. I know them. I don't know if
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But well, that sounds challenging and interesting. Where do you hope Home Tour is 5 years out?
You know, I'd like it to be a sustainable model. So I'd like, for what we're doing now, I'd like to go in, represent that the model works, create an infrastructure, have basically in the same way that you have a booking agent has a touring network of clubs, that this is an alternative touring network for musicians to play. And also, ultimately, I would like for these systems to be in place for people to play for each other. And so it becomes, you know, a glorified house concert, but it happens on a regular basis where people who are residents, long-term residents on these sites, are able to produce shows, they're able to host shows, where music becomes a much more integrated and lasting part of their community.
It seems like such an easy sell because, I mean, that, well, first of all, earlier in your the Arts and Ideas session, you showed a promotional video, which is so effective because you just can see with your own eyes how powerful this program is. So in one sense, it seems like an easy sell. In another sense, you're asking various kind of siloed professionals in all of these different areas to stretch a little bit further than they might be used to stretching. Mm-hmm. How hard has it been to find true kind of meaningful partnership, whether it's in you know, the housing authorities or the mental health communities or the education, I mean, wherever the places are that are outside of the music world that you need to partner with?
It hasn't been hard to find the structure for the sites. I think it's a no-brainer for like Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And on the other hand, I'm coming in and we're essentially doing it for free in the first incarnation of it. And so that is not hard. Funding has been a challenge. You know, we've certainly had support here in Connecticut. I think the funding on a local level has been easier, but once you get into, you know, the foundation world, the corporate world, on a bigger level, which is what we're going to need nationally, you know, we will need to and we'll be able to demonstrate our impact. But I don't think all impact can be measured. And I think that there is an intangible impact on people's spirits that is not something that we're going to be able to throw into a spreadsheet and quantify. And so that's my, you know, challenge too, is being able to articulate that impact, whether it's through testimonials, whether it's through videos, whether it's through testimonials of clinicians, the mental health, medical community, to be able to do that. It's harder. I understand why it's hard, and I'm actually very enthused by that task, because I believe in it, and I think we should have that larger support.
Where did you assemble, or how did you assemble the skills for that kind of work, just the organizational level of this, which is incredibly ambitious?
You know, I sort of grew, I feel like I was born with a spreadsheet. I love, it's sort of my joke with the band. I said, I'm a project manager who sings. And I love it. I mean, I love people. And so the notion of coming to New Haven for the first time, not knowing one person, and navigating the city and figuring out how to make it work, is for me not just an organizational task. It's kind of meeting all the different people. And so I have a really great support staff in certain areas, and that's been helpful. But I find the whole thing very rewarding. That part, the producing part of it too.
Yeah. Well, that definitely comes through. Yeah. I mean, that's yeah. Well, I know that you're on a tight schedule. So thank you for carving out this time. Is there anything that you didn't get a chance to say? I mean,
sure.
About this whole undertaking.
Well, one of the things I just wanted to say about Connecticut specifically is that one of our goals is to partner with arts organizations, and specifically with festivals, because they have that decentralized model where people are doing things all over the city. And so it's really a pleasure for us to work with Arts and Ideas Festival. And I know that we're right now talking about creating a more structured partnership with them moving forward. So I hope that happens. And we feel very honored to be headlining tonight on the New Haven Green, and we're glad to be here. So.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And
thank you.
Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.